to this episode of the Postural Restoration Podcast. I'm very excited today to have our third and hopefully not final guest from Japan. We'll definitely have some other guests from Japan and, you know, some of our PRI family over there. But Takashi joins us today. And Takashi, generally, when I have these Japan episodes, we're kind of, you know, it makes it difficult with the time change and scheduling wise, but it's nice with you. Takashi is actually in the States for advanced integration and to see some family and things like that. So we thought we'd take advantage of being on the same time here today. But welcome, Takashi. Thank you for taking time out of your day to be here and join us for our listeners.
Oh, great. Thanks for having me today. I'm kind of excited to talk about my history and stories here. But the best thing is we are in the same time, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I'm actually staying in Virginia right now. So 1 hour difference, but
yeah. And we just got done mentioning Takashi, every time you come back to the States, you guys have your certain food and certain beverages and all these different things that you don't get back at home that I'm sure you're enjoying right now.
So. Yeah, definitely. I've been missing those stuff in Japan. Yeah. So I'm crushing on it.
All the Americanized fast food.
Oh, yes. You can tell three of us, Sign, Kenny, and I are definitely Americanized. And,
yeah.
You know, you can tell we're missing it.
Well, Takashi, again, thank you for being here. Just quickly to introduce you a little bit, Takashi, we'll go through your history of your education, but just for our listeners to be aware of kind of who you are and mm-hmm. and what type of background you have. Takashi currently is part of our PRI Japan faculty. The interesting part of Takashi's story, which we'll get into a little bit, is that Takashi actually joined us first as the first PRI Japan education coordinator, which, you know, Hannah is our education coordinator here at the Institute, along with Jen as the director of education. But Takashi, that was really your first role with PRI Japan, and we'll get into kind of how that came about. Other than his roles with PRI over in Japan, he has a Master's of Science, also, which is in Applied Physiology and Kinesiology. You know, you're an athletic trainer, strength and conditioning coach, hold some other, you know, certifications, PES, you're a PRT, and things like that. So Takashi, we'll definitely get into some of those things. And again, I just wanted to make sure that everyone's aware of kind of, you know, if they haven't met you or seen you throughout your course journey, hopefully they get a good appreciation of who you are and what roles you have within PRI Japan. So mm-hmm. Takashi, why don't we jump right into kind of your education then, kind of building on what we just discussed. Just briefly before we got on the recording here, I learned something new about you as well. You know, your time, your very first educational experience here in the United States was actually before your undergrad exposure. So maybe walk us through kind of, you know, what it was like to come here for education, what made you, and maybe we go even before that, Takashi, maybe what growing up made you interested in these sciences, in physiology, kinesiology, human performance, kind of the route that you took as a young, you know, scholar, if you will, and what then led you to come to the United States?
Yeah, well, that's a long story, but...
Well, the short version.
let me talk about it. Yeah, first time, I used to grow up playing baseball all the time. And then you may heard about Japanese baseball. They just throw baseball all day long, all year long. So obviously your arm's going to get hurt. And then when I was in a junior high school, I went to PT clinic, which is kind of lucky that people actually go to judo therapist or acupuncturist, those kinds of manual therapy. I ended up going to PT clinic. And then all of a sudden, I was told to raise my both arms in front of some machine. And then the machine actually has a screen of my body with the whole different colors. So I was raising my hand, and then I'm lefty, so my left arm is about to turn into purple, and then my right arm is still like green and yellow and red. So that was like a thermography of my arm. So I was definitely having like a, you know, TOS type of issues on my arm. as junior high schools and stuff. I was like, wow, this is cool. You know, you see my body turn into purple, and then you should be concerned at that time. But I was like, oh, this is cool. So I learned a bunch of rehab exercises when I was in junior high school. And then I turned that into my team's exercise, you know, because you want to prevent those injuries, right? I didn't want my teammate to be injured. So doing those rotator cuff exercises with the bands and stuff. So that was my first experience touching clinic physical therapy or human movement, yeah. You know. So in my bottom of the heart, I was like, oh, this is cool. Body is cool. You know, that's my beginning. Yeah, I ended up playing like a big high school that's kind of famous for baseball. We had like 80 kids in the team, so I never get to play in a game. If you want to learn about Japanese baseball, learn Japanese. But that's what happened. But we eventually are in the same prefecture or the district of Daisuke Matsuzaka. You know him, I'm the same age. He's super famous. And then by the time he graduated, he was undefeated whole year. So then we all the way to national championship. And I was like, wow, this guy is going to go to MLB eventually, right? So my motivation, the kid never played baseball game in a high school career. I was like, I'm going to get to the MLB before he reaches to MLB. You know what I mean? Like, and then I was interested in the body. And then in the high school, I was treated with acupuncturists and everybody. So that didn't get me right. But, you know, that one of the acupuncturists told me, like, there's a guy in the United States holds ATC. And then that belongs to NATA. And then I had no idea what that was. But I guess all I know was if you want to be a Major League Baseball, you need to be ATC. Yeah. That's all I knew. And I don't know what the heck does ATC means. And then I started to look for the career. And then I actually took the exam for a Japanese university exam. And I passed it, but one of the letters I got was introduction for United States education system. And then one of the pages says ATC. And I was like, I guess this is what I'm looking for. So I changed my decision to go into university in Japan. I started looking for a university in the United States. And then ended up being in Virginia first time. I call this George Mason University. I entered George Mason as an English student. Like, it's not the English major, but they have like English for second language. So I got into summer English school. So that's my first United States experience in Virginia, yeah. 3 months in the summer. Well, and then I ended up, yeah, going to Towson University, start majoring athletic training. You know, all I was looking for is to how to get to Major League Baseball. And then being an athletic trainer, I guess this is the shortest way with my interest.
Yeah, so. You could have gone to the MLB as an athlete, but, you know, that clearly wasn't.
No chance.
As lucrative. Yeah, it wasn't as quick of a journey.
Oh, yeah. If you see Daisuke Matsuzaka picture, like I had no chance, you know. So I got to start somewhere that I'm interested, you know.
You found out that if you can't play your way to the MLB, you better go some other route.
No chance.
Well, it's interesting, Takashi. You know, one of your friends and colleagues, Sai, has a similar story about how this brochure for this athletic, you know, a brochure, like a flyer or a course flyer for an athletic training course.
Yeah.
Just happened to come in the mail. And it was kind of the sign she was looking for, kind of similar to you finding a similar thing.
There's the same institute that helps us to bridging Japanese kids to go to the United States.
Yeah. So. Well, and as you mentioned, you know, you made your way here, and, you know, as we were talking before sitting down, I'll just quickly mention, I think it's so cool that your first ever educational experience in the States eventually led to you finding now your wife of however many years.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I met my wife in that at English school.
It's very, isn't it crazy, Takashi, how that works out?
And it's crazy. I'm talking here in Virginia. This is where we used to stay. So
back at the start.
Yeah, yeah. So Northern Virginia, this is where the George Mason is, so close to Washington, D.C. And right, I'm just sitting right now talking. We used to stay here 19 years ago. Wow.
Yeah, very cool.
Actually, 20 years ago.
So anyway, Sakashi, after kind of, you know, you received your master's then at the University of Florida after graduating with your bachelor's from Towson in Maryland. Takashi, after receiving, you know, your master's and athletic training, you know, you eventually had this goal in mind of working in the MLB, which, you know, as it turns out, you know, you kind of ended up in that setting shortly after graduation. So maybe kind of walk us through, you know, after eventually getting these degrees, was there a certain connection within your program, within your department? How did you get your feet wet within the baseball community? Who were some of those mentors and people that helped with that and really exposed you to that world?
Yeah, let me talk about that. So when I was with Towson University the last year, I was applied for internship with the spring training in baseball. So the invitation was coming from Kinesio Taping, you know, the taping company. They were inviting Japanese therapists coming from Japan. They're looking for translator/student to internship. So we have two guys assigned for each team. So I was ended up with going to Texas Rangers. So I was translating a guy from Japan. And obviously I was so interested in baseball. So I didn't translate as much.
You didn't care about the translation.
Well, I didn't care. It's not like that. I was like, you know, when you speak different languages, I assume this guy next to me understand what he was saying. So I was like, And then I was just doing whatever I was told to do.
Yeah.
And the next guy was like, can you translate me? He was like, oh, I'm sorry. So I was so hyped up and excited. So that was when Jamie Reed is the head athletic trainer for Texas Rangers back then. He's in the front office right now. And Dr. Keith Meister, his first year in 2004, he's the head team physician. He just arrived to Texas Rangers from, guess what, University of Florida. So that that was March. And then I was talking to Dr. Meister, hey, I'm applying for the University of Florida. And he's like, oh, really? I just came from University of Florida. So I'm going to talk to my people. I'm going to help you out. And then I was like, wow, that's awesome. So those two guys started helping me out so well. And then I ended up going to master's at the University of Florida. I'm sure Dr. Meister helped me a lot going into that program. And then towards the end of the University of Florida master's degree, Jamie actually called me, are you interested in doing athletic training internship at Texas Rangers? And I was like, oh my gosh, yes, you know. Yeah. We had a good connection between when I was at the Florida, Jamie and I actually talked a couple times, sent the email stuff. So Jamie remembered me and he actually called me to do the internship. So right after graduating, I just drove to Texas from Florida just to start doing some internship. And then obviously internship, they didn't want me to travel with them. So when their away game, I was at Dr. Meister's office. Back then it was called the Medical Center of Arlington. That was my starting career of physical therapy clinic in the United States. So I'm at the home, I go to the game at the stadium, and then at away games, I'm staying at the office clinic.
Well, it's so cool that, you know, it worked out for you to be able to kind of matriculate from your graduate program and go directly to kind of your goal. You know, it was an internship and it wasn't maybe your goal. You weren't done, you know, with your career, but you ended up, you know, within the baseball community, like right away, which is so unique because, you know, with any sport, especially professional sports, we have people throughout the country every day hoping for these opportunities. And you know, dreaming to one day get an opportunity like that. And to have that right out of school is such a cool thing.
I was so lucky. My nickname was the Rangers was lucky too. I burnt the waffle maker first day of the internship, and then the clubhouse manager was so pissed, and I had no idea what he was saying. So I was like, no, not me. English problem, I guess. Yeah. So I didn't get called. So Jamie started calling me lucky.
Yeah, anyway. you burnt everyone's breakfast and somehow got away from it.
Yep. What great was about the internship was I didn't get to stay in the clubhouse entire time. I get to see a clinical part at the hospital or the clinic.
Yeah.
That was my beginning of feeling, okay, well, if I only see baseball players, you know, that's kind of skewed, you know. So if I get to see a general population or baseball players in the clinic, it's totally different. So I want to say this is the neutrality I started having, you know, not only baseball in the clubhouse, but in the clinical setting, I get to see those people.
Well, and then Takashi, walk us through a little bit, you know, as you kind of begin to open your mindset to other things besides baseball, mm-hmm. walk us through how you became more involved with these other avenues. So I know you spent some time with the NBA D League with the Fort Worth Flyers. You did some, you know, you were selected as a athletic trainer for an all-star game for a year. You know, then finally you went back to working in more of a PT setting. Mm-hmm. But walk us through these next years of maybe after that internship, mm-hmm. the different opportunities that came up, or kind of your route through those different opportunities.
Let me tell you, the hardest situation for Japanese student comes to the United States is about the visa.
Yeah.
So thinking about working here is so tough. I joined the Rangers and the clinical setting internship as a things called OPT, occupational practical training. You can actually stay 1 year after graduation.
School.
Yeah. So that my internship is basically off of OPT. Now, my goal is to stay in the United States as long as possible. So wherever I do the internship, I love to stay in the States. So I was begging for the visas and stuff. So I guess the hospital actually decided to start hiring me as the head athletic trainer for Fort Worth Flyers. We used to support this team as a hospital, as a sponsor. Yeah. So one of the guys got called up from Minnesota Timberwolves, and then the position is open. And then they look at me like, would you want to do that? I was like, yeah, I never played basketball, but I love it. So I don't care, as long as they give me
business. As long as it's a job that I can say that I work. Yeah.
And obviously, they wanted to give me a visa, and then we had like a moment that like the hospital decided not to give me a visa. And I was like, I started complaining. I was, you know, doing everything for this and this, and talked to CEO of the company, and they turned it out like, okay, I'm going to give you a visa because it costs.
Yeah.
And then I started doing the Fort Worth Flyers, and then that team was doing well. So the first time of the season, I was selected as the All-Star trainer. That was the first year D-League did the All-Star game when we were in Las Vegas. It was fun. Don't let me tell you anymore. It was
okay, well, we won't talk anymore about your time in Las Vegas.
Yeah, but I'm so glad I experienced the NBA system, that the league is so awesome, organized, educating the players. And all I remember was cleaning up the, you know, uniforms and stuff. But we worked hard our entire year. Some of the guys are still in the NBA system coaching, the younger guys now. Anyway, that experience turns out like, okay, the team is actually resolved after 1 year because of the financial problem. And I was like, oh, what am I going to do? But I got the visa from the hospital, not from the team. So I ended up staying at the hospital, just seeing the patients all day long, in and out. I mean, that experience helped me a lot. Being able to see a post-op patients or grown-up patients, giving them HEPs and, you know, all kinds of exercises. We had a good team with the physical therapist at the MCA. He is now physical therapist for full time for Texas Rangers. So
it all comes full circle.
Yeah, it all comes up in the system. So we used to just work, you know, hard every day seeing patients. And then I ended up actually going to New York City, start living with my current wife. Back then was a girlfriend attending a graduate school in New York City. So I got the job at the New York City, same experience. They have a clinic and athletic...
Outpatient
clinic with the athletic facility. So they have a training and track and the physical therapy clinic right next to it. So we ended up working there. And then after her graduation, I decided to go back to Texas. And then Dr. Meister actually opened up his own clinic, not part of the hospital, his own clinic as the Texas Metroplex Institute of Sports Medicine, TMI Sports Medicine.
Yep.
So I joined the team again. They did the baseball motion analysis with the strength and conditioning and the physical therapy rehab. So yeah. I was almost like coordinating all those three parts of the clinic and just running around. You know, obviously if the guy's getting better with the rehab, they started to throwing. So I go outside and play catch with them, take the video, put it up on the computer and analyze their mechanics based on our science.
Kind of similar to what got you interested in the first place when you were injured as a...
Exactly. Yes. Yes. Taking a video motion analysis. We had a Dr. Warner, she published a bunch of throwing mechanics articles. So I was get to learn with her all the time. And, you know, how do we apply this complicated science into actual practical setting after getting better with the rehab? So my clinical experience helped me a lot instead of just being in that clubhouse. It gives me a different insight about baseball.
Yeah, you're definitely unique in the field of athletic training and the fact that you had all those other clinical experiences and opportunities with physical therapists and outpatient rehab and post-op and all these things that, you know, a traditional athletic trainer first or second year out of school may not get a lot of those opportunities. Takashi, before we move forward, I know there's one other kind of, you know, professional type of setting you were in, and that's kind of when you got involved with the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
You were part of your American tour right now that you're back for. Included a baseball court, a PRI integration for baseball course.
Oh, yes.
Here last weekend in Phoenix with them as the host. But maybe briefly mention what got you to working with the Arizona Diamondbacks and then kind of moving away from Texas and working more, more with their program.
Yeah, definitely. So the visa I got was the working visa. It's called H-1. That'll allow you to work 3 years, and you can extend it only one time for next 3 years. So that's total 6 years, right? And after that, you're supposed to get the green card, permanent residency.
Yeah.
Now, with the TMI in Texas, I was actually thinking about getting a green card. Can they sponsor me? Or, you know, that means actually they have to pay for me to stay with taking Americans get that same job. You know what I mean? Like Japanese guy taking up a spot for Americans. So the government, you know, obviously having the strict rules and money to keep that guy in the work setting. So that was my time to think about, or either I'm going back to Japan, or if I don't get the green card, what am I supposed to do, you know? So I was told from a Japanese professional baseball team that I got the position for them. I was like, well, that's cool, but if I don't get to see you guys, how am I supposed to take that position, you know? So let me go back to Japan, see you guys and talk to you guys and just, you know, get to know each other.
Yeah.
So I took a trip, four days, going back to Japan. Leave Texas on Thursday, got there on Friday, and spend the day with them for Saturday, and coming back on Sunday. That was the trip. And then I saw them, let me tell you, I got six sick. Like I got fevers and coughing, all that stuff. And anyway, I get to see them. Hey, nice to see you. And then people are kind of like welcoming me. And then after that, I got the email saying like, oh, you didn't get the job. I'm sorry. We are looking for Japanese certified guy, not the ATC kind of guy. So I was like, shoot, what am I supposed to do? Then in that same, I think it was in November, and then December, I got back to Texas and there was a winter meeting. It was holding up in Dallas, Texas, which I 50 minutes away from where I used to live. So I got to go to a winter meeting, kind of poke my head out and seeing people that I know. And then all of a sudden I saw Nate Shaw. He's the strength coach at the D-backs. And I said, hey, what's up, Nate? You know, I knew him since he was in the University of Florida. When I was taking graduate school courses, he was invited to teach for us how to look at the human body and stuff. I was like, this guy's cool, you know. That's when I started really getting interested in human movement science. And then I saw Nate and I was like, hey, what's going on? Nate was like, are you looking for a job or what are you doing? I was like, oh, I was about to go back to Japan, but if I have a visa, I can stay. And Nate was like, are you interested in taking a minor league position? I was like, oh, yes, definitely. So he sent me email to what to set up. And we started talking and like, okay, I'm going to Arizona. I was like, oh, wow, how lucky is that, you know? So Nate definitely helped me to pick me up. And, you know, thanks to University of Florida Gators, you know, Gator connection got me up.
Yeah. Well, he's
every time I'm facing a tough situation, my mentors definitely pick me up and help me out going to the next door.
Well, you definitely, we've all fallen into those kind of, you know, we call it luck, but I think more of it's more maybe chance encounters or opportunities. If you know, a lot of people may look at those moments and decide that maybe if you know, if you didn't know Nate or if you didn't have those connections, you would have probably just gone back to Japan at that time. But
yeah,
you know, a lot of people may just look at opportunities like that and decide against them. But being willing to step into those opportunities and move from Texas to Arizona or move, you know, from one job to the other job, it's not always, you know, it's a lot of unknowns and you don't always know what's going to happen.
I'm unintentionally, unconsciously led to those situations.
Yeah.
On purpose. Yeah. I don't know what to say, but I was.
But no, Nate is a, you know, he's a PRT and, and he's a great guy and we've gotten to know him really well over the years. Really their whole staff, Takashi, as you know, working with them, you know, Ken Crenshaw has been involved with PRI for now decades. Ryan and just so many different guys down there that continue to really support us, and likewise, you know, we do everything we can to support them, but they just have such great guys and continue to mentor and be a good program for others to look to.
Definitely.
So Takashi, you take a job with the Diamondbacks. What I really want to get into now, Takashi, is kind of your relationship with Kenny and whether or not, you know, before you took your job with the Diamondbacks, at what point did PRI actually pop up in your journey? I know you met Kenny, I think around 2010.
No, actually earlier than that.
Earlier.
Yeah.
So at what point, you know, like I said, do you remember where you were working or at what point did PRI kind of fall onto your radar? I'm sure you got more involved with PRI concepts after you were with the Diamondbacks because they were probably using it at that point.
Yeah.
But walk us through kind of how you're exposed to PRI. I know Kenny had a part in that. Maybe there were some other people that also, you know, were a part of that. But walk us through your first introduction to PRI and how that came about.
Yeah, let me start with complimenting Kenny. I know him since he was at the undergrad student at TCU, Texas Christian University. And then he worked so hard, and then he studied so much that I can ever imagine. Like, I thought I was working hard and I studied hard, but this guy is unstoppable, and I cannot imagine. Like, this, I almost made a definition. Like, for, if you work harder than Kenny, that's the definition of hard. So I respect this guy as a student, but he was struggling, you know, managing time, and he's doing too much. And, you know, I used to cook for him, like, hey, let's eat, you know, before you study. Make sure you eat before you study. So we know him since when I was, I bet, at least 2007 or 8, something like that. And then we got close together, and then I'm learning from him too. And then when I back from New York City, he was still around Texas. So I was talking to him, and definitely his eyes are open to anything else other than just the school study. So and he told me, like, there's a weird stuff you need to learn. I was like, weird stuff? What are you talking about? Like, he's like, oh, it's about the asymmetry and breathing. I was like, no way. I'm interested in human movement. I want to rehab. No, he's like, no. Just trust me. Weird stuff. But so it's like, okay, well, if Kenny says good, it's good. So I trusted him. And then I started taking PRI course. First time, 2010. Still remember April. And it was in the Fort Worth golf course. They have a PT clinic inside. So James Anderson came in, he's like, started talking about PRI stuff. I was like, oh my gosh, why did I take this course? I have no idea. In the first couple of minutes or so, or maybe 30 minutes, I kind of realized, okay, everything on my table, okay, learn from, you know, college to grad school to now that point, I have to turn that table down. Just flip that and then start making PRI work. Because the way I said, why did I take this course? It's I realized this is something that I can develop upon it, not just technique, not just one-time quick fix type of deal. This is the way of learning or pathway of almost like something you have to learn throughout the life, not just technique or method.
Ongoing
way of, this is Japanese way of thinking, but the path is something that you know, you heard about judo, kendo, you know, do means path, a road, or, you know, pathway. So I realized that. I was so shocked. I was like, I don't want to do this again. I worked so hard to hear, maybe I don't want to do this again. But at the same time, I was like, I looking at James talking, and his body action was awesome, and you know, it's almost like a show, you know. I was so into it, and I didn't understand anything, but I realized, okay, if I can teach a PRI course like this guy, it'll be the coolest thing in the world. That was the first day. That I only thing I took was a couple reposition exercises, and that was it.
Yeah,
I'll look after James. I said, oh my gosh.
And do you remember, Takashi, was this a respiration
course? No, that was a Myokin course.
Myokin.
And then I was so into it. And so I started taking a postural course in September. I did a bunch of manual techniques and, you know, a couple of exercises. And I was like, this is cool.
Yeah. When you were done with that first course, Takashi, was that, you mentioned that being after your time, were you back with the Rangers or were you at the Diamondbacks at the time?
No, I was with the TMI, Texas.
TMI.
Yeah.
So were you able to take the information and start applying it? Or what was the biggest, you know, what was the biggest gap between taking the course and going to apply it? I mean, were people receptive of it back at TMI? Did you have other people that were interested, or were you kind of, you know, what was that like?
That was the toughest part. Regan, the physical therapist, now at the Rangers, we used to work team up together. He was so open to it. So he's like, do whatever you can do to get this guy better. You know, other than that, I don't care what you do. So yeah. I started doing some 1990 hip lift or adductor pullback and stuff. And then in the physical therapy clinic, we used to pump everybody in the same time slot. So we have so many people running through. We were so busy. And then the hardest part was explaining exercise because I feel like I have to.
The why behind it.
Yes. Why and the instruction of the exercise, you know. And then I didn't understand the whole picture, you know. Back then I was still looking at like, oh, this is a great hamstring exercise. No, it's not.
It is, but yeah.
And then which way of hamstring you're talking about or what fibers or, you know, I was so small visioned.
Well, and you kind of talked about that path or the road or the journey or however you want to look at it, but it had to start somewhere, and it's hard to have the big picture until you've actually been through every step of that journey to be able to see that big picture.
Yeah, so definitely it was a plus for me to be in the clinic doing those exercises. And then eventually that I did an interview with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Like, they're like, what kind of a continuing education you've been taking? I was like, oh, I'm interested. I'm PRI. They're like, oh, PRI. Yes, good. You know, so I almost like connected with them as the common language that, okay, yeah. This guy knows PRI. This guy's at least interested in PRI. So they could even think like, oh, this guy is open-minded and that desire to learn. So,
well, and at that point, they had probably been introduced to it maybe before you even, or sooner than, you know, they probably had already had some people that were working with, you know, our techniques and implementing that. So to have a few courses under your belt definitely helped.
Yeah, definitely.
Takashi, if you get back into your time with the Diamondbacks, what eventually, I know you ended up back in Japan and I don't know kind of the full story, but whatever you're willing to share, what led you to A, go back to Japan, and B, at what point did you know that you wanted to actually become credentialed in the science? So you actually received your PRT credential in 2016. Mm-hmm. At that point, you were already back in Japan?
Yeah.
So maybe walk us through kind of the time between receiving your PRT credential and going through that credentialing, and you know where you're currently at with the Diamondbacks, kind of the steps that brought you back to your home in Japan and working there, and how you got to where you are, you know, with your PRI journey.
Yeah, so 2012, I joined the D-backs, and then we, you know, after spring training sessions, we started doing like a self-studying session, so learning together, whatever we can do to get us better. And then during the season, I used a lot of manual techniques and some exercises. And then it wasn't enough for me that I call myself as like, okay, I know PRI, you know. So when I look at the website, it says PRT or PRC certification is available. I'm like, wow, this is something. If I think this is the pathway of the life, I got to be PRT, you know. Since I'm an athletic trainer, I get to choose PRT. But in 2012, I went back to Japan for off season. My wife got the job in Japan because the visa the professional team provides the wife or husband, they can't work at the United States. So she was struggling that she can't work. So she got the job in Japan. I was so happy. So we spent one season without living together. And then I was like, you know, remember I was kind of having a doubtful mind of Japanese baseball situations.
Yeah.
Because you think about it, you get 80 people in the team and I don't get to play baseball. Now, if I look at the American system, they get to play at least, you know, it doesn't matter if you're good or bad, you know. And then the medical system in Japan is somewhat skewed too, because they are so passive. They just lay on the table and then the guy's going to fix you. You know, there's just so many like got hands that you touch the body, your pain's gone type of deal. There's so many people.
Right? Manual work and different manual, you know, hands-on treatment.
Yep. So it's not bad at all. It's actually great. But what's missing is the exercise. That they it's not theirs. If the, even though the pain's going away, your movement is not theirs.
The minute they get off of that table, as anyone in our world knows, they're back to their old position pretty instantaneously.
Yeah. So, well, when you think about my career, that I wanted to be a Major League Baseball athletic trainer. And well, I was in a minor league, but I become it. You know, I became a minor league athletic trainer in the MLB system. That's great. And then one of the best teams that I wanted to go. Now what is the thing, right? So I would start thinking like, maybe can I contribute to Japan? Knowing this system and all kinds of the medical setting and the exercises and all that, can I contribute to Japan? That was my second thought of the line after becoming a Major League Baseball athletic trainer. And then I was like, well, this breathing thing, it's not something for a professional baseball player. I can definitely go back to Japan and teach this breathing for kids or elderly populations or just the regular people that hurts the knee. You need to breathe right. So I decided to go back to Japan after second season. And then, but the meanwhile, I'm not familiar with PRI yet. So, and then I always think in pursuing PRI career. So the first goal was to become PRT. And then when I go back to Japan in 2013, 2013, November, that was the time I started pursuing for PRT.
Okay.
Yeah, it just took me 3 years to become
PRT. Yeah, well, and I think in the meantime, according to my notes here, Takashi, shortly thereafter, you know, I'm not sure if you were residing in Kyoto yet at this time, but shortly thereafter, you started up and began to work with Improve, and you started, you know, your first kind of collaborative, you know, professional opportunity called, which was called Reach. But maybe walk us through, like you said, your ultimate goal was to go through PRT and get your PRI credential. But walk us through kind of those first initial years of getting back with the clinical side of things and trying to build a clinic type setting back in Japan, which, like I said, eventually was called Reach and where you still are today. But, you know, kind of that part of your story and what the what some of the struggles were, or how the culture of Japan obviously was so different from coming from the MLB with the Arizona Diamondbacks and really coming back to your home culture and trying to figure out, you know, as you mentioned, how do I incorporate breath work or respiratory mechanics or rib cage positioning or any of these things with a whole different culture that may look at you like you're crazy.
Oh my gosh. So, yeah, let me talk about that. First, let me tell you, going back to Japan was one of the craziest things. Like you said, we are Americanized, sort of kind. I was here in the States for 14 years. Now I'm older, I'm a little scared. When I came to the United States, I wasn't scared at all. I was like just a young guy.
Young, excited.
Yeah, excited. I wanted to be athletic trainer in the MLB. Now going back home, it's like hard. Like how much am I going to make? Or I mean, it's great to live with my wife, but
can we survive?
Yeah, how can we survive? So one of the guys in Japan that I knew from 2004 or something, he invited me to come to Reach, the company called Reach. And then he's like, well, why don't you start working here? So he got me a position that the athletic trainer that works at the conditioning gym, basically. We call this medical fitness. So basically, medical checkups are offered twice a year, you know, blood screening, you know, CT scan for belly and stuff. So we can consult their health, even though they're older, elderly populations, you can do that. So I start working there, implementing breathing techniques and stuff, but people are not used to exercise to get better. they know fitness, they know gym, they know condition, they don't know condition, they know training, but the people looking at it is like, this is for healthy people. So whoever has back issues or whoever has knee issues, they don't come to gym. They just go to straight to the clinic or a judo therapist or acupuncturist and just lay on the table.
Moxibustion, whatever
they can do. So someone's going to fix you type of deal. That's where we had to start. And this is where I'm still working on it to recognize people when you move your body in certain way, it gets better. And that's how we started. So different situation in the United States and Japan. United States people are actually going to the PT clinic most of the time to feel better. And then the physical therapist actually teaches the exercise so they can do it at home. That's a culture. Yeah. People somehow they know, okay, you got to exercise to get better.
Or you have to actually take ownership in your own
Exactly. Your
own health and your own well-being. Mm-hmm. You know, and as you go through something like that, you know, we've all probably had injuries, and mm-hmm. our listeners, we've all been through some injury in our lives,
mm-hmm.
but there's a time and a place for surgery and manual work and all those things are so needed and necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, as you mentioned, people kind of, they get back to health and they go back to their lives, and all of a sudden they're wondering why some of these symptoms are returning, or why their knee pain is coming back, or all of a sudden their back now hurts, where before it was just their knee and hip and now it's moved up their spine, and whatever the case may be. Japan has this very interesting, you know, I say this, Takashi, just from being there and seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get into your current clinical setting here at the end when we wrap up. But, you know, seeing how you practice with the movement, you know, movement science and really what we would call here in the States, you know, conditioning or sports performance.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, to most of Japanese culture, it's still very new to them. And
it is.
You know, we really kind of hit it on the head. The cultural differences are so vast that, you know, if you're not one of these hands-on, and like we said, they're very necessary and they're all doing good work. It's just that sometimes people miss that. You know, they miss the appreciation for actually having we call it exercise techniques, mm-hmm. but the repositioning that they can do on their own, or the breathing mechanics that they can actually control on their own,
is
such a big piece. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, you still are working to kind of get that point across every day.
Yeah, that's my work, actually. Here's the thing. We got the Olympic coming in next year, 2020, Tokyo Olympics. And now the world called conditioning should be the soft legacy after the Olympics, you know, should be. But still looks like, okay, people are not willing to exercise to get better. People are just going to the clinic. So after having PRI courses in Japan, lots of judo therapists comes in, lots of acupuncturists comes in to learn PRI.
Yeah.
Which will supplement what they're doing already.
Exactly. And
that's great, you know. And then from my standpoint, okay, you don't have to do complicated exercise or super training, or you don't have to be an athlete. People hear training, people think, okay, I have to be the athlete. I have to be the Olympic guy. No. You just do stuff to get
you just
better.
Have to take ownership of your own
exactly the ownership of the body on their own is missing. So my standpoint, well, why don't you just breathe? And then people ask him like, oh, I'm breathing. Come on, you're not breathing as you want. You're not maximizing. If you optimize, I want you to realize how easier the life is. So that's why I published 3 books, and just to make them breathe. You know, it's kind of crazy things, but
I definitely want to get into some of those other resources that you've put together.
But before we get into too much of your current situation,
yeah,
let's just circle back for just a second, Tekashi,
yeah,
and go back to 2016 now, when you actually did come back to be credentialed.
Oh, yeah.
Which actually leads to kind of your involvement with PRI Japan. At the time, I believe, you know, Kenny and Sai were both credentialed already. There was, yep, probably a few other PRTs, mm-hmm, in Japan, and a PRC, Sai's husband, Taro. But at the time, were you the only one from Japan in your class? What was it, you know, you came back for PRT testing. Were you prepared at that point, having been working with PRI? And as you said, you kind of had about 3 or so years,
right,
you know, clinically. But what stood out to you most about the PRT process, you know, without giving away parts of what that entailed, but was the application itself the most, you know, we get calls every day, Tekashi, about people that are interested in these application processes, but maybe are a little bit hesitant, or they're a little bit scared and they think maybe they're not ready yet, or maybe they should wait 3 years, kind of like yourself. Mm-hmm. But what was some of the challenges with that? And then after we get through what that meant for you and what that entailed, we'll kind of talk about where it led to and how you became involved with PRI Japan.
Yeah. So when I look at any certifications, the getting a certification is not the goal. Its goal is to, what are you going to do with that?
With it.
So yeah. I will think about PRT as a process that makes you become better PRI.
Yeah, provider.
Yeah, provider, definitely. So I always wanted to come, but I was also scared and kind of anxious about, you know, taking the test. You know, am I going to do all right? Or, well, when Japanese thinks the test is like, okay, you got to be well prepared and you have to know everything. Well, no, actually, application process itself helping me, and then which I didn't realize that until I get that credentialized. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I have to do this. Yeah. I have to do this. So this is for the test. But no, actually, this is actually making me a better clinician.
It's actually just part of the learning itself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because that jumped me up from just the reposition guy to actually retrain and then restore. That was the way I have to think about it to complete the whole clinical process of PRI science. And then that definitely helped me up. And then, you know, when you take the test, you're not perfect. You're never going to be perfect. Back then, we were implementing PRI in Japan with Kenny and Sai. I was thinking, like, well, do I have to be perfect, you know? But who's perfect?
Yeah.
You know, I'm still learning.
Well, you know? And the cool thing is, you know, after, as you go through it and you take that exam or you go through the application, the coolest thing, Tekashi, is that every single applicant and every single individual has a different way of viewing a technique or an activity. So the reasoning that you may give one of your clients, you know, a sideline, you know, integration, whatever it may, number 45, whatever the technique may be, you may choose that technique completely for different reasons than why Ron would choose it or why Jen would choose it.
Right.
So the opportunity to be surrounded by like-minded people, walking through this process, I think is the best word that you use, the process of the application. I think, you know, as you said, really, you know, really provides a learning opportunity in and of itself beyond just taking a test and getting a credential.
Absolutely.
But, you know, as I mentioned with Kenny and Sai and just the language differences in their own right, we still to this day include English text in the Japanese manuals just because of the meaning of words for you guys is different than the meaning of words that we may have them in our American scientific definitions.
Oh, yeah.
Just that barrier was a little bit, I can only imagine that it was difficult.
Yeah, we teamed up. I got to respect Kenny and Sai on this one, but translating the manuals and the presentation slides and then whatever the words using in the course is, it's one of the toughest things that you could actually kind of understood version or comprehended version of saying, okay, this means this. It's easy because that's your understanding. But like you said, any single exercises, intention is different person by person, you know? So our goal is to translate Ron's word.
Meaning
the way Ron's do. That makes sense? It's not translating Ron's word into Kenny's understanding, or Sai's understanding, or my understanding. It's we trying to deliver Ron's word.
Well, and the other, so the reason I would bring up that every technique is different for every person is the cool part about our science is that, yes, there is parts that need to be didactically presented, or the meaning has to still be there. For example, a left ASP is always going to be a left ASP. You know, there's things that are kind of factual and ingrained, but then you take the techniques or you take the application of those concepts and you can apply them in so many different ways, which is so cool. And it's part of what makes that application process and the credentialing processes so fun, because you get to be in a room and we get to hear your guys' stories. Mm-hmm. You can have someone next to you that is applying it to dance or to singing. Elderly care or to pediatrics or whatever it may be. Like we said, how you apply it, you know, how Takashi, you apply the science is going to be totally different than how Ron applies it or anyone else.
Well, absolutely. That's the most fun part, that application is, you got to be yourself. It's not like, oh, Ron told me to do this or Kenny said this and that. Yeah. No, it's about you, how you're going to apply this. And that's what's missing in Japan, like from exercise, self-consciousness.
Yeah.
Can you feel yourself? And, you know, can you stand on the heel? Because we've been told too much. And then you hear, like the Japanese, we don't discuss as much.
Yeah.
So that's something we like to introduce when we start doing the PRP.
The PRP, which we mentioned briefly in the past episodes, but the PRP credential would be the postural restoration provider in Japan, which we're really excited about. But Takashi, if we, you know, as we wrap up here, we'll get into kind of your roles with PRI Japan. I know shortly after you became credentialed in 2016, this was around the same time, actually. Well, the first PRI Japan course was in 2015, but then shortly after you were credentialed, Jen actually made her first trip to Japan. And I believe, you know, I don't know if it was Kenny or Sai or all of you, but there was a few courses being offered and Jen was going to come and kind of, you know, see how things were going and try to help out where she could and maybe lab assist and just kind of be exposed and be part of that PRI Japan initial, you know, it's kind of the initial, the very early days. But I know, you know, I just spoke with Jen here talking about this episode, and I know that was kind of the first really sign of your involvement and bringing you on with PRI Japan in some of your current roles. As we mentioned, you are the education coordinator for PRI Japan. And Takashi, I mentioned to you before we started that I think, you know, it's a really good opportunity for us to discuss some of the underlying roles that even Hannah and Jen and people for even the PRI here in the States, you know, these things probably don't always get the attention they deserve and the time that goes into, for us example, Hannah and Jen working, we just are kind of producing and publishing the 2020 schedule and the new brochures and all these other underlying projects. But as far as your education coordinator role, maybe just, you know, highlight some of the things that you were initially interested in or how you, you know, we had Kenny and we had Sai initially translating and teaching these courses, but it was quickly apparent to Jen and to the directors and to really everyone involved that we needed someone to be the general kind of organization behind hosting the actual courses, mm-hmm. which would involve scheduling and communication with the host sites and finding new host sites. And, you know, initially, Takashi, I remember days where you were kind of out there in Japan, just going from site to site, just trying to make connections and grow different, you know, clinics and hospital settings, and just trying to get doors open to be able to host PRI courses. So walk us through kind of what that was like being brought on as the coordinator.
Let me tell you the history of PRI Japan. So I think it was from 2013 or 14, and when Kenny and Sayo started preparation for PRI Japan courses, I mean courses taught in Japan, in Japanese. And 2015, that was July, that's when Jen actually came in to see the first two courses ever taught in Japan in Japanese by Kenny and Sai. So I was so excited about PRIs coming into Japan because I was so scared not being able to learn PRI in Japan. So I poked my head out there. Hey, Kenny and Sai, I know Kenny and Sai about 10 years back then. So, hey, what's going on? And they're talking to me, introduced to Jen, and hey, well, how are you? And this is this, that. Then I kind of had a thinking about like, okay, is PRI going to be successful in Japan? Because back then there's only two courses all offered. And then we're not sure if we're going to do this.
It was kind of a, you know, the first two courses, as with any new course, you have to offer it a few times to be able to receive feedback and see what the state of the culture is.
Yeah. So I kind of researched about, okay, how many people are actually potentially interested or being able to take this course? Because there's so many PTs, but not as much as here in the States. But at the same time, we have so many judo therapists and so many acupuncturists and so many other trainers that are willing to take. So I kind of estimated the numbers and presented to Jen, okay, this could be your potential numbers that you can actually run PRI in Japan, because that was about 100,000 people. So it's almost the same number as the PT in the United States. So that's feasible to say, okay, we're going to run PRI Japan. You know, if you have like 10,000 people total, that's not possible, you know, because the business is going to be 10 times smaller. So Jen was like, okay, great. You know, just stay in touch type of deal. And then in the September, they started saying like, okay, Takashi, are you interested in doing PRI education coordinator? I was like, yes, you know, I'm in Japan. And then, like I said, my standpoint is like, why don't we breathe, right? So I teach breathing, just breathing, basic breathing. And then I can introduce you to PRI, okay, you know, as a coordinator, just to develop a fundamental. So you don't just run out of the course after 2 hours the first day, you know?
Yeah.
Just to get them ready. So I start going into other places and, hey, I'm a coordinator. Are you interested in hosting a PRI course in the future? And then those guys actually ended up hosting a course all around the country, which is so lucky, so graceful. I really appreciate people supporting PRI to fly in Japan. So that was how it started. Now, education coordinator, you have so many roles, you know, from registration to keeping up with the homepage, making up the future plans, and then the printing the manuals, send them to host site locations, and make sure you have a contact with the host site, make sure they run the course well, registration, what are you going to do if they sometimes cancel the course or they want to transfer the course?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that just happen that people don't, you know, if you have 50 people at a course, that's, you know, that's 50. Well, there's probably more like two or three emails per person, you know, when they sign up, receipts, sending them information. So you may have 200 emails just with one course, but
there's a lot of background work that definitely goes on.
So me and Jen kind of talked about how do we develop a system that we all can share, because, you know, if I don't want to do my own thing in PRI Japan, because that's not going to do anything.
Well, so. And it did have to be slight, you know, it's very similar to, you know, we were able to kind of help you in the regard of how we do things here in the States.
Oh yeah.
But even with the courses, you know, everything has to be tweaked a little bit differently to be able to be as successful and run as smoothly in Japan as it does here.
Yeah, one of the biggest differences, we don't host the course in the PT clinic as much. They hosting is a vocational school setting.
Yeah.
So we rented out the school setting and they all come to the school. So sometimes they don't have the exercise tools. Or can we find the wall? Or can we find the band or balls and stuff? So we usually ship out those balls and bands and balloons to the course.
Yeah.
Those are the biggest difference, I think.
Yeah. So. Well, and one of the things I wanted to mention too is at this point, Kenny and Sai were not even living in Japan. So you were really the only the only PRI Japan staff member that was there, because they were still kind of back and forth and still in the States part-time.
Yeah. It was funny that Kenny and Sai were not being able to come back to Japan either. Summer or winter, this is the time we can just crash the course, you know. So we schedule 4 courses in summer and 4 courses in winter, and back to back, you know, traveling city to city. And then sometimes at one point, I remember we had like 2 or 3 courses, 135 seats that sold out in 13 minutes. One of the craziest moments that we almost even crushed our homepage capacity.
Yeah, I remember some IT issues that day.
And it was usually over the weekend, so people actually can sign up, you know. So we've really
been fortunate to evolve and grow, and thanks to you and Kenny and Sai, obviously. Yeah. Takashi, now we offer, you know, when you started, like you said, those first couple courses were all that was being offered, but we're happy to now offer all 3 primary courses.
Yes.
I mentioned it in the past couple episodes, but impingement and instability will be coming.
Yep.
You guys have a symposium now every year. Very exciting things. Maybe just quickly mention, and any thoughts that you have, but I know a few years after you started your role as a education coordinator, we got to a point where it was time to look for other faculty and get more speakers on board, just because of the volume and the amount of courses and travel and different schedules. But walk us through kind of your first teaching opportunity. Did you ever expect to be teaching? I know you kind of wanted to get there, but was it something that was outside your comfort zone? Or walk us through kind of your first course as a faculty member, which now you're part of the faculty and also the education coordinator, but walk us through how that came about and what the hardest part of that was.
Oh yeah, well, being an education coordinator definitely gives me a good behind knowledge how we run the courses. So that got me comfortable. Okay, well, like I can run the courses. Now, being the faculty is a different story. Like, am I gonna teach this? You know, I was looking at Kenny and Sai teaching flawlessly. That I was so impressed. But I remember the first course I ever took from James. I definitely thought this would be cool if I can teach this. So this wasn't out of my comfort zone, but it's almost on the edge. Like, can I actually transfer Ron's message? That's actually a big responsibility, you know. But I trusted myself, you know, and then Kenny and Sai were really, really helpful that developing me as a faculty, because they stay side by side with me, and then they teach me, okay, this was missing, or this is something you can do better, or we always discussed how to make this thing better. Even I was sitting Kenny's and Sia's course before you even think about me being a faculty. We just thought about, okay, what we can do this to make this course better.
Or providing feedback.
Yeah, that. So I was the guy, I was coming from the providing tips and, you know, other things that the improvement, that was my thing. So they helped me out to be in a better faculty. So because of their help, I was able to become a faculty. And the first course I teach, it was in Kyoto. It was last year, it's 2017. Kenny was just looking at me and sitting. Basically, he said, great, good job. I almost forgot one part that I always really wanted to say. So Kenny kind of pitched in and, hey, Takashi, what about this? So I just as the asking the questions, Kenny, thanks, saving me. I couldn't leave here without saying this and stuff. So other than that, it was awesome. So Kenny said, good to go. So after that, I'm still teaching. I think I taught 5 courses total or maybe 4. So I'm getting comfortable. And then now Mr. Takahashi is actually coming into getting a faculty.
Yep, and we continue to kind of think of others and continue our training as we do here in the States. Takashi, you know, it's every story is so unique, and I enjoy kind of, you know, not very many of our faculty get the other perspective of running a website or running course tuitions or having the administration side of things and the appreciation for everything that that does require. As I told you before we started, you know, I really want to thank all of my colleagues and Jen and, you know, Ron's obviously at this heart and soul of the courses and a lot of the direction that we take, but there's all these things that go unnoticed and go unappreciated that, you know, you and Hannah and all of us are really a part of that are very easy to not really think about. So I know we took some time on it, but I really wanted to at least have that conversation about what the coordinator role is and all the other things that go into these courses.
Yeah, I really appreciate that help from I'm getting from you guys, especially Jen, RJ, Hannah, everybody. Yeah. Sage is the new addition. She's helping me on the website.
Doing great with the website, yeah. So, but as we wrap up, Takashi, I do want to kind of talk about, you know, currently where you're at. I believe, you know, as far as when I was there and you reside in Kyoto and kind of are still working with some of the same people that you initially worked with when you first moved back. You know, maybe tell us a little bit about your current setting with Improve and your current, you know, offerings that you have. If people are interested in finding you in Japan, you know, we have all your information listed, but do you take new clients? What's the typical client that you work with? You know, some of that information.
Yeah, absolutely. I resigned Reach in 2016, and I'm running self-business right now. And then one of the business that I do is going to Improve Kyoto. This is a personal training gym. I consult with them, and I help taking care of the athletes or just the regular populations. Rehab training that I love to do. I'm still doing.
Is that something that you do accept new clients?
Oh, yeah, you do. I do accept the clients. It's only Wednesday and Friday, but this is something that I really enjoy. And then I also working at the Osaka University as a researcher once a week, but we running a lot of projects. And then I love to transfer the message, okay, well, you can move your body to get better. So I'm teaching doctors and PTs how they move, how they breathe, and so which will help to move better or get the pain away.
Well, that kind of walks us into Takashi. You know, as you mentioned, you've written several books and literature on just simple, you know, breathing mechanics and respiration and diaphragmatic function.
Yeah.
But maybe mention what led you to want to and to desire to author some of those publications. Obviously, there's a need for more information out there. And
Oh, yeah. One of the things I wanted to transfer is I do want to introduce PRI into my society, which is underlining my intention But like I said, why don't you just breathe before moving your body or training your body? And then when you think about the breathing, it's not only for exercise. Your mental health or
physiology or anything
that actually breathing actually relates to everything. Now, cervical revolutions, cranial resolutions, oral functions, how you move your tongue or how you set up your throat, airway management, all kinds of stuff comes into play with the breathing. So if you want to know breathing, or maybe why don't you know breathing before you even talk about some specialties of your learning, you know, I want to feed the learning, not the top-notch stuff. I want to feed the learning of the base fundamental stuff that's missing in Japan.
We are, you know, we have a couple of your past copies, and we're so excited to see you here in about a week and receive one of your new books.
Oh, I got you that.
I have to say it's frustrating, and I'm slowly trying to become better at, I think first I'm going to try to learn to read Japanese before speaking it.
You better learn speaking first.
Speaking first, okay.
Oh my God, too many letters to learn.
But you know, we love seeing your publications, and I can't wait to flip through the new one. But walk us through kind of the three different books you've authored, what the titles are, and what each one focuses on, Takashi.
Oh my God.
Just because you know we aren't really able to comprehend what those are, we will. We'll mention them, and for anyone in Japan that is interested, you know, head over to Takashi's, to his pages on our website. But walk us through kind of how you outline those books and how you got across the point of respiration and some of these concepts within that literature.
Those first book that I published with one of the guys used to work Seattle Mariners, we titled as Breathing Method for Winners. You know, that was based on my Major League Baseball story and his Major League Baseball story. I introduced PRI more than anything else. That even talks about FAAF movement. So that was kind of technical. And then the second book that I published was Breathing is the Best Buddy for Your Life type of title. And then that actually focused on the neutrality of your body. And then not only for the neutrality for your body, I think neutrality concept turns into neutrality for the life. You know, you even skewed to think this way, but there's always another direction. And then being able to go both ways is actually helps your life better. That was the second book. And then the third book has more pictures, almost like how to exercise and stuff. It's called the basic breathing, straight out. Even attached a couple of balloons in that book.
So
people loves the attachment.
Although I noticed, Takashi, that the balloons that you included in that book, they have a generous, you know, it looks like the Perform Better people sent you some balloons, but we should have sent you some, you know, we should have got some purple balloons in those books. But
yeah, I know. I was just thinking about that. I was like, shoot, maybe.
Maybe for the fourth version.
We'll talk.
I'm just joking with you, but we you know, we always enjoy seeing your work come out, and you know, I look forward to seeing some of the research you're doing. As we wrap up, Takashi, you know, you have some kids at home and a wife you're with, but do you have any other, you know, any other things that you'd like to mention, or hobbies, or parts of your life that maybe are outside of PRI or outside of what you do with your, you know, athletes or with conditioning? Any hobby, you know, what do you do when you're not working?
Well, I'm almost working all day long. So it's like a 6 a.m. meeting with Jen on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
Time different kills, you know. But I'm thanks to PRI, I'm able to stay home more than anything else. I'm not working to a company right now. I'm self-owned. So I get to stay with the kids.
Spend time with your kids.
Yeah, spend time with the family. Sometimes I have to go, you know, some different city over the weekends. But My family let me do that. I love it. And then I still play baseball. Imagine. On Monday, I still play baseball in Kyoto. So as long as I get to do that, you know, taking kids to kindergarten and stuff.
Your hopes of MLB athletics are not done yet.
Not done yet. It's about the consistency. How long can you? Yeah, but yeah. Still, just enjoying life in Japan. Definitely coming back here now. I do miss being in the United States, but I do realize okay, being in Japan is not too bad as long as you choose to do so. So
yeah,
anywhere you live, I think I'll be happy as long as I stay with my family.
Yeah, well, and thankfully we get to see you throughout the year, and you're able to make a trip back every once in a while.
Oh yeah, definitely. Thanks to PRI.
You know, we look forward to visiting Japan again and seeing you guys. And it's all exciting, Takashi. And again, I really appreciate you taking the time today away from your family. You are back in the States with your family and to see family. So thank you for being with us. As I mentioned, this will go on your Find a Provider page, your faculty page.
Right.
But really, for anyone that is interested in contacting you, please shoot him an email, visit his pages. You know, you do a lot of the Facebook, you know, PRI Japan on Facebook, and lots of different posts and information and activities going on. So please continue to follow PRI Japan. This kind of wraps up, Takashi. You know, until we have some of the PRTs and PRC, some of them on for an episode on the podcast, this kind of wraps up the formative years of PRI Japan. And currently, you know, you, Kenny, and Sai, which currently are, you know, comprise our faculty and our staff. So it continues to evolve, and the journey is definitely just beginning. But thank you again for being here, and I look forward to seeing you actually next week. So
thank you so much. I enjoyed it too.
If you're interested in learning more about the Postural Restoration Institute, you can visit our website at posturalrestoration.com. You can also email me directly at info@posturalrestoration.com or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter to see how PRI Nation is currently applying this science. As always, thank you for listening, and I look forward to having you on our next episode.